I seem to recall that the last person who was able to read everything published in English was either Thomas Jefferson or Benjamin Franklin. But even they would have no chance today. There are now about 60,000 books published in the USA alone, every year. And this would mean that to keep up just with the books published in the USA, one would have to read 1,153 books a week, or 164 books a day. Now, assuming that such a Herculean task is only possible by a computer, what then are the realistic possibilities for the average person? On a rough calculation, if one read 2 books a week for 50 years, say between the ages of 20 and 70, this would add up to 5,000 in a lifetime. Not bad, considering the number of emails and magazines one would also have read in that time. However, during the same time period, there would have been 3 million new books published in the States alone. So this is excluding the works published in English in other nations, and this is just the new publications. It doesn't include all the classics and the other great literature that was written before you started on your hypothetical goal of 2 books a week. In our day, to choose the very best of what's published is to say, the least, the only wise option. But how in the world does one choose the best? Well, I wish I knew, but the following are some of the filters that I use. And if you have some good ones, let me know, because I need them. First, ask the leaders you meet to tell you the 3 best books that they've read this year. It doesn't mean you'll necessarily read them, but at least you can be aware of them and then buy or borrow them if they interest you. Second, read lots of book reviews. Now, most book reviews in Christian magazines are very brief and only inform you of the book's basic content. However, try and find some journals or websites that do comprehensive book reviews that are around 4 or 5 pages long. And if it's a good journal, their editorial team would have sifted through hundreds of books on your behalf before making their recommendations. And dare I say it, a really good book review might mean you get the core of what the author has to say without needing to read the book itself. Now, I know this is cheating, but living under the ominous shadow of that mountain of 60,000 new publications, one does need some defense mechanisms. Again, I'm on the hunt, and if you have some good resources, let me know. Third, I don't think you need to purchase everything that you want to read. In the States, the library loan system means that for a small fee, you have to fill out a form and then pay a small fee, they'll find you almost anything published, whether it's just off the press or has been out of print for over 100 years. It's really an outstanding service, and I'm always astonished to discover that sometimes a theological work that I request is found in an obscure library over 1,500 miles away from where I live. And now, with the push to put libraries online, within a few years even something like the library loan system will be out of date. will simply be able to download the book directly onto our computer, Kindle, iPad, or smartphone. But this ease of accessibility makes the task of choosing well even more imperative. Then fourth, don't think that you have to finish every book you purchase or borrow. Sometimes, depending on the material, I'll look at the index, read the last chapter first, pick out a few other chapters that interest me, and then I'm done. Now, this drives my wife mad, but Churchill used to say that just to pick up a good book and smell it did him good. Now, normally, I at least open it, although I have to admit that even smelling a new book also does me good. Fifth, if a book's advertised in a journal, magazine, or online by the publisher, then beware. Their goal is to sell a product, and you'll often, perhaps often's too strong, but frequently regret the purchase. Try to get a personal recommendation first, or read an independent review. And this is particularly important if you purchase online, as then you don't have the opportunity to flip through it to see if it's really what you want, as you would in a bookshop, before you purchase. Then finally, great books are like great music. When listening to Mozart, not everyone's cup of tea, but you get my point, one savors the music without any desire to reach the end as fast as possible. Very few of us would rush through all of Mozart's works so that we could then push on as fast as possible to listen to everything Beethoven or Bach wrote. We simply don't handle great music like this. In fact, the opposite is usually true. We don't want a great piece of music to end. And once it does, we often immediately listen to it again. So it's curious that our attitude to good books is often so different. We tend to read books with one eye on how many pages are remaining. We want to finish as quickly as we can so that we can get to the next one. But if we've chosen well, this is foolishness. We can enjoy being in the presence of great literature, just as we can enjoy being in the presence of great music. We listen or read so that our minds and souls can expand and be enriched. The goal is not information, but wisdom. And wisdom will not be rushed. One great book, read and reread, will do us more good than 20 mediocre books that we scurry through as rapidly as possible. And by the way, aside from books borrowed from friends or from the library, I mark all my books. Once marked, I can go back and find things easily. My notations and underlining bring the basic content of a chapter cascading back into my mind. Unfortunately, this means that I have to purchase most of what I read, and in addition, it ruins the value of my library. But for me, books are not something that can remain in a pristine condition. They're the tools of my trade. A beautiful Teflon frying pan sitting there in all its glory is nice to look at, but it won't stay like that if it's well used. One final thing, I think it's the final thing, or almost the final thing. Refuse to give way to snobbery in the area of books. When informally chatting with a small group, particularly with people you don't know well, there's a temptation towards what we might call literary name dropping. The question inevitably comes up, oh, have you read so-and-so? And we hold our breath, hoping that we'll be able to say, yes, I have. But if the person is really a bookish snob, they won't leave it at that. If you say, we're all a little bit embarrassed, well, no, actually, I haven't, as if you committed some great transgression, then they'll ask, well, I'm sure you've read so-and-so, and on it goes until you wish the ground would open up and swallow you. Of course, you can always arm yourself mentally with the title of an obscure tome. Something in the 1500 page range works really well, the kind of thing that you had to read for an equally obscure project in college, and then manipulate the conversation so that you can ask them if they've read it. Something in a foreign language works even better. You know, you can be talking about Nietzsche and then just kind of say, well, actually, have you read the French edition? It really is good. And then when they somewhat embarrassingly say they don't read French, well, you've won the game of one-upmanship at that point. But why even play such silly games like children? So read what you value and refuse the social pressure that inevitably will raise its ugly head from time to time. None of us can read more than a fraction of the mountain that's out there, and the have you read question is often designed to determine whether you're kind of in the know or whether you're really cool or not, rather than one that's designed to lead to friendship and fruitful and mutually respectful dialogue. So just decide that this is one game you're not going to play. And actually, it's more impressive to hide what you have read, and then if it should come up in the flow of conversation and you mention that you've read it, your credit rating immediately jumps up. But perhaps this is only reverse snobbery. It might be better to just sit in the corner and quietly read a book. Well, that's about it, except to say that over the years, I think I've lost about a third of my library in lending books to people. You know, I get a book, I'm really excited about it. I think that this is really, really great. But I know the person that I'm talking with, often it's younger people, students, they can't afford to buy it, and I can't resist lending it to them. And being as I'm not that organized, you know, I don't jot down their name, their email, you know, their social security number, etc., etc., so I can be sure to follow up their borrowing and get the book back. By the time I realize that it's gone, I've completely forgotten who I lent it to. I think books are probably the only thing that you can give to Christians that they don't have any conscience about not giving back. I mean, lend them a hammer and eventually you'll get it back. You know, lend them, I don't know, you know, lend them a shovel and eventually you'll get it back. Lend them a book and you might as well wave goodbye. Now, if you just happen to have some of my books sitting on your shelf, I'd be so delighted if you package them up and send them back. But that's highly unlikely, and so, hey, if you enjoyed it, I'm glad. And just have to buy another one, even if the price of secondhand books now is soaring with their availability online. Well, that's about it. I need to stop and do some reading. And I promised my wife that today I will not start with the last chapter. And I won't, unless she's asleep before I begin.